Welcome, everybody, to the NPC's Weekly News Roundup. For the week of September 8th, 2023, here is what's making headlines. Nintendo shows off Switch 2 demos at Gamescom. Starfield hits 1 million concurrent players on launch day. E3 2024 not happening, maybe in 2025? Steam will soon show players which games support PlayStation controllers. And Rockstar may have sold some games with DRM cracks on Steam. My name is Travis Sherman, and as always for the Weekly News Roundup, I am joined by none other than Kyle Inman. Kyle, howdy.
Well, hello. How's it going?
Hello. I'm surprised we're even doing this, given the fact that I should be playing Starfield right now, but, right? You know... Yeah, I mean, that game is addicting. I mean, I'm only just over 4 hours in, but man, is that game fun.
See, I haven't started yet, but I've heard at about hour five, just things start happening as you're following the main story that drive you away. I mean, you'll see a ship crash, and all of a sudden you can go over to that and inspect this, and I've heard it's just insane.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised to find out that the weapon tuning in there can actually, like on your ship, can actually get to the point of being able to target specific systems on enemy ships. So instead of just blasting away at a ship, you know, and effectively taking everything down as you go, you can instead target things like engines or the grav drive or, you know, the cockpit. Basically, any of the parts that you want to attack, you can, but that comes as you gain more parts and upgrade those parts on your ship. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Although I will say there are some places I would like to be able to fly my ship around, like on the planet surface, for example. Like I did have to go to the moon in these 4 hours. So, and by moon, I mean Earth's moon. It would have been nice to actually go down there and actually fly around with the ship instead of, you know, having to walk around. So,
right.
You know, but of course, it's a great game. It's obviously a Bethesda game, so your little bugs and hiccups here and there. But it's fun, and I really think if you're not playing it, you are missing out.
Well, I am definitely missing out then, right at the moment.
You are. Womp womp.
Yeah, no doubt.
But we'll talk about some Starfield news here in just a moment, but we're going to start off the news roundup for this week talking about Nintendo. So, according to Video Games Chronicle, it turns out Nintendo may have, behind closed doors, showed off some games running on supposed Switch 2 hardware. And I put that in air quotes. According to the sources that Video Games Chronicle had talked with, and of course this also goes with Eurogamer as well, it looks like Nintendo had some behind closed doors show-offs of games, or tech demos, running on hardware more specifically tuned to what the Switch 2 what we're calling it right now, the successor to the Switch, what that is running under the hood. Now, it's not like they had a actual Switch 2 or whatever it's going to be called in the room, but they were running on hardware that is near one for one with what gamers and developers can expect the Switch 2 to basically have underneath its hood. So it most likely, just like we see with developer kits, it's usually some type of PC that has all of these different things kind of built out in it to make things work for development purposes. Obviously, it won't look like the final product. I mean, go look at any development console over the last several generations, and I think it's pretty safe to say it's probably a small, like, Intel Nook type PC or something. But anyway, so, Kyle, it looks like what they showed off here were a couple different things. First thing they showed off was apparently an improved version of, and I don't know why, was Zelda Breath of the Wild. And apparently it was running at a higher frame rate and resolution than the original game did. But there's no indication that it'd be re-released. It was probably just what they were using for tech demo purposes. And then another one, at least another source to Video Games Chronicle, said that they showed off the Matrix Awakens Unreal Engine 5 tech demo. Which Epic created and put out to show off the capabilities of the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 a couple years ago. I find that very interesting, especially in the fact that They are still partnering up with NVIDIA, it sounds like, on the chipset underneath. The Switch 1 right now runs a NVIDIA Tegra processor, which is way old. But apparently, whatever they're going to be running SoC underneath will be capable of the DLSS upscaling, as well as, surprisingly, ray tracing, of all things. So it's very interesting to hear about some of this already, but at the same time, we know that we're getting to the point where we should be seeing something about the Switch successor. I mean, what do you think about that, Kyle? Like, does that excite you about what this could be? Is this just more, I guess, competition for Sony and Microsoft? I mean, like, across the board, like, what do you think?
I don't know. It excites me. In a way, I feel like maybe Nintendo has seen the progress that has been made in handhelds with, like, PC gaming and whatnot with the Steam Deck, and that now we are capable of putting these, you know, I guess, much more demanding games on a handheld, or something that could be potentially on a home console and a handheld. And at least that's what I'm hoping for. You know, judging that we're still calling it a Switch 2, there's potential talks about, you know, LCDs and whatnot, as well as frame rates for both, like, connected and disconnected, that are still, you know, rumor, but they're actually starting to float around now. So I'm really hoping that, you know, this is Nintendo fully diving into to the next gen. I would really like to see, if nothing else, I don't necessarily need DLSS and ray tracing on a handheld console. I'd like something to be able to be capable of playing games that are on par with you know, your Microsoft, your PlayStation games from Nintendo. I'd like to be, you know, able to join people from a lobby on my Nintendo console that are playing on a PS5 and so on and so forth. But beyond that, I think it's really exciting. As for the Breath of the Wild thing, I could totally see them either re-releasing it or making a patch to definitely show off the capability of the unit. It's something that we've seen in the past. I mean, look at what they did with Mario Kart, and now it's basically 10 years on since the original version.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if it'd be like a Breath of the Wild re-release of sorts. It seems it'd be weird, especially because they released Breath of the Wild for the Wii U and the Nintendo Switch, with the Nintendo Switch being the kind of like the better place to play it. Makes me wonder, really, if it would be more of a re-release of Tears of the Kingdom with more of this capability, especially because we see how much that game chugs right now when you start to introduce more interactive portions of, say, like the Ultra Hand ability onto the screen at one time, where things chug or where things pop in and out, or, of course, the infamous problems we saw with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet on the Switch as well. So the idea, of course, that it'd be Breath of the Wild would be weird. It'd make more sense for it to be Tears of the Kingdom, but maybe this was just more like, well, let's take this older game here that modders have improved the quality on PC and do that here, you know, to show like what the Switch 2 can do.
Right. And, you know, maybe it's something to bring up about the whole Mortal Kombat thing, but I mean, supposedly there's a possibility that Mortal Kombat 1 fits on an entire Switch cartridge, which potentially means that maybe those Switch cartridges that are like higher capacity are becoming more and more less expensive. So maybe there's potential for us to see, you know, a Breath of the Wild Tears of the Kingdom combo pack that gets released, that they just include Breath of the Wild for those that haven't played it, you know. But really, it is about Tears of the Kingdom. And the tech demo that we're seeing is just the patch that you'll see on the previous version that's included.
Very possible. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Nintendo to do something like that especially, but we'll just have to see how they want to handle it. I mean, they're not shy from doing these combo packs for games anyway.
Right.
And I don't think they've necessarily done it on the Switch per se, except like the only one I can immediately pick out off the top of my head was the Super Mario the Super Mario bundle that had Super Mario 64, Sunshine, and Galaxy all on one mm-hmm. cartridge. But of course, those are very old games and very small games compared to something like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom being put onto one cartridge. So it's possible. I could see maybe something like that happening, but at the same time, my thought more on anything is that Breath of the Wild was just something simpler for them to work with, given, of course, that, you know, Tears of the Kingdom is already out and making boatloads of money. They want to show, like, what could happen maybe with older stuff, especially because, like, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, as far as I know, share the exact same engine. I don't think there's anything different except maybe a few under-the-hood tweaks. But needless to say, though, hearing exactly, like, what they showed off behind closed doors is pretty awesome. And does give me hope for a rather high-powered Nintendo console to come out here soon. But, of course, I think a lot of that power that people are going to be expecting is going to be more when the handheld itself is docked. Not necessarily when it's up and moving around. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's probably when you'll see more of like the DLSS kicking in, is when it's in its undocked mode. But when it's docked, I bet you're going to have the better quality experience. Especially, like, that's probably where ray tracing will actually kick in. You'll have DLSS on the go and DLSS while it's docked, but ray tracing only when it's docked.
See, and that was my thought too. That was exactly what I was thinking, is you're probably not going to get all those extra special things in a handheld mode, but the minute you dock it to a, say, 4K TV, you might be getting, you know, that higher capability of, or higher video quality, as well as, you know, your ray tracing and so on.
Yeah. So in the meantime, of course, that's about all the details that we've got. We're waiting, of course, to actually hear any more potential tech demos that have been shown off. But at the same time, as it stands right now, and we've talked about in previous newscasts, is the rumor mill is showing potentially a mid to late 2024 launch, not necessarily a reveal. So it's likely we could get a reveal sooner, but it sounds like launch may not be until the end of next year if something does happen. So until that time, we'll just keep looking out for rumors and other pieces of information, and we'll tell you all about it when we hear about it. So let's carry on. And of course, we carry on into Starfield, Kyle.
Right.
So Phil Spencer has gone on the record here as of the 6th to indicate that Starfield has exceeded 1 million concurrent players across all platforms, which really is just Xbox and PC. However, even with that information out, though, is it did cross a total of 6 million players, though, overall on this new game, though, in I believe on just launch day alone. Which, that's pretty cool. So yeah, that came out. This news, of course, is from GamesRadar. So it did get announced there. Apparently on Steam, that's where a good amount of these players are actually hanging out at right now. So it's not only people who are playing on Xbox and PC through, like, say, the Xbox Game Pass app, but a lot of people are playing through Steam right now. So if I go here and look at steamdb.info to see exactly how many people are playing, there are 252,816 people in-game as of this recording.
Wow.
And the all-time peak is just above that at 269,177. So obviously, of course, this other million concurrent, you know, is going to be across what is being played on PC Game Pass and on the console itself, too. But needless to say, that's awesome to hear, and Xbox Game Studios and Bethesda really needed this win, I guess, after, of course, the stuff with Redfall and the chaos with Halo Infinite at launch too, and then sort of a lackluster release schedule on a bunch of other things for the for Xbox's Game Studios. So this has been a really good thing, and I gotta say, like I said at the beginning there, is that this game is fun. It's exactly what you expect in a Bethesda title, Kyle, but it is fun. And I expect to see more people play it, especially as more people join up either to Game Pass or they actually go out and buy the game physically.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to play it, right?
I'll definitely play it. I see it being easily a driving factor for people to pick up Game Pass. And then, you know, when they get sick of actually paying, you know, just to play one game, potentially even pick it up. But I don't know. It's nice to see that Bethesda is actually, I don't know, doing well on a launch. I mean, you compare it to even like Skyrim's launch. It wasn't nearly as good as this launch. So,
well,
congrats to them.
Here's the interesting thing, Kyle. I'll make comment on that because I was looking it up just as you were talking. Is that apparently Starfield has not actually beat the total concurrent players on Steam. Starfield has not beat Skyrim on Steam yet. Skyrim on launch day, November 10th, 2011, had 287,411 players. And again, Starfield at its peak, 269. So just under it, but still at least a monumental feat. Again, given all
of
the stuff that's been going
on. Was that their overall peak?
That was at launch.
Oh, really?
Is what it looked like. Yeah, that was at launch, and then it was a pretty big drop then. However, needless to say, though, this game is still only a couple days old. There have been people that have been playing it a little bit longer than these couple days, given, of course, early access and a lot of stuff going out for like reviewers and things, too, and influencers, in that. As it stands right now, though, it's pretty cool to see, though, at least that this game is doing as well as it is. And I am enjoying it, and I know a lot of people are, too. And especially, I think Phil Spencer even said in one interview that he's already played through it twice. So, you know, obviously not just the Xbox boss trying to push this game to make the money, but at the same time, it's like he played through it twice. I'm not going to argue with the guy, you know, even at a gamer level. That's awesome. So, good information around all there. Go and check that out. But in the meantime, of course, while you go and start downloading that game, because you have plenty of time now while that game's downloading, let's move on to the next story here and talk about E3. That's right. Obviously, we've talked about E3 plenty of times here and the chaos that's been going on with it since, oh God, I don't know, at least 2019, 2018.
Oh, yeah. It's to a point now. Where I used to hear E3 and get super excited, and now I have this like wince, you know?
No kidding.
Every time I hear E3, because it's just bad news every time.
Dude, same thing here with me. It's always that, and I don't understand. Like, it just bothers me, of course, that happened. But so what's going on here is that E3 2024 may not be happening because the partner for E3, ReedPop, has actually backed out, saying that they won't be working on future iterations of E3. And so basically they broke up with ESA. So because of that, ESA informed, according to this article from Eurogamer, they say ESA has also informed the Los Angeles Convention Center, E3's long-held home, it will not turn up there in 2024. Following an earlier report which stated the LA City Tourism Department did not expect the show to run there for the foreseeable future. So, obviously, of course, we're not without our gaming events. E3 was always the one, like, Kyle, you made it clear, that was the one where it popped in your head. It's like, yeah, we're right there. It's awesome. We can watch all these trailers, watch the live streams of these reveals. But since then, we've got Gamescom, we've got GDC, we've got PAX,
Tokyo Game Show.
We got Tokyo Game Show, Summer Games Fest. Thank you. That was the one in my head, Summer Games Fest. Game Awards even does a lot of reveals, not just handing out awards for games and such, but the reveals that come with it. I mean, we've got so many other things that are happening, plus the stuff that's being hosted by the individual companies themselves. I mean, Nintendo's good about their directs. We've got Sony with their State of Plays. We've got Xbox with their developer directs and their other showcases. I mean, we've moved past the point of E3, and the writing's been on the wall. I know, of course, Jeff Keighley, who was originally with ESA doing E3 and now, of course, runs Summer Games Fest and Game Awards. You know, he's upset that E3 couldn't have turned around and been that other event that it had always been, but the writing's been on the wall for long enough, and there's been enough things that have taken E3's place. If they go back and revitalize it, they try to do what they said here, they're going look for a complete reinvention of the show for 2025. What's that really going to look like compared to what we've now received in its place since it can't deliver?
Yeah, and I think that the fact that we keep having to ask that question is the fact that it's one more sign that this is just a burning ship that Reed Pop was trying to get off before, you know, it totally sunk. They have successful conventions that they do, especially with like PAX, and obviously it's successful for not only the developers but the fans. And E3 has kind of been, you know, something that has been glamorized by the fans, but it was really more for the developers and the publishers and the media all along. And now that it's gotten over romanticized and you know, spent so many years away, I think that we see that there are other successful venues that aren't nearly as crowded, can provide more information, more demos to people. And I think this is really it for E3. As much as they really say that they're going to try and return in 2025 or whatever, and hold the show off in 2024, I think this is the last sign that burning ship is sinking, and it's not going to be lifted.
Yeah, it's not really showing any good signs of life here, and I think we're in a spot that it's just, I think E3 needs to finally set sail and just move on. I think the ESA needs to get out of there and partner up in a different way with these other existing ones, realizing that they're never going to be in control like they were with E3. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to just understand that, or don't do it anymore. Just step back and realize that you've been replaced.
Yeah, and especially stepping away from the LA Convention Center. I mean, that's been E3's home for years upon years. And I think that's one of the biggest indications that we're seeing now, is that where are they going to possibly secure another location that is as large to host that many people to be able to get the traffic flow? There's only a few that I can think of, you know, maybe Vegas, Seattle. But even then, it's a far stretch, and it makes it difficult for publishers and whatnot because it's longer for them to travel. There's a whole lot of factors, and I think now, especially, you know, when we're even seeing publishers do their own direct style YouTube videos of what's coming out, and you know, you've got Nintendo that does it, Xbox that does it, Sony's State of Plays. I think this is it. This is the last nail in the coffin, and I'm sorry to say it, because I've wanted to visit E3 for years. It's been a dream of mine since I was a young child, and I hate to see it go, but there are so many more that do it more successfully now, is what I should say.
Absolutely. No, you're right on that one, and all we can do is just remember the days of E3 past and just carry on to these other things that exist, because they fill that gap, they fill that hole, and mm-hmm. they sometimes even do it better. So we'll just wait and see what this revitalization, this relaunch is going to be for 2025, but know for the rest of the gaming industry that 2024 is not going to get E3 yet again. So we carry on into all of the other events that we've got to watch and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on into the next story here, of course, something that I believe some gamers might enjoy here. Starting this next month, in an update in October, Steam will now start telling you, as a gamer, if a game has native PlayStation controller support.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's a very big thing here. So Valve apparently put up a blog post on Tuesday, specifically for developers, that announced that they will be able to mark their games as DualShock 4 and DualSense compatible. So they will now be able to go ahead and add that as a tag and allow gamers to find titles that have support for the PlayStation controllers, because not everybody likes playing on an Xbox controller or another third-party accessory there. So the bonus, at least, is that with this coming in, there are games already that do use, or at least that do support PlayStation controllers. Mm-hmm. But there are things that don't directly get supported off those PlayStation controllers in their fullest extent possible. Like the DualShock 4 controller has the touchpad across the center of it. And of course, the DualSense controller has the haptic triggers on it. So, of course, those have been a big thing for Sony with any of the shooter games or anything with like racing and that too, where, of course, those can really change the feel and the effect of what you're trying to accomplish when using those triggers to perform different actions in a game. So that's going to be a big, big thing for them to go ahead and introduce. So it's going to be starting to roll out in October, but apparently that's not the only thing they're going to be including as well. Too is that apparently there's going to be some other updates going on in October that Valve has made clear, at least for Steam, saying that it's going to display controller support to also specify the level of PlayStation controller usage, updates to browser pages to make it easier for players to find the new games that support the controller as well. Like I said, it'll be based on those tags. Updates to the desktop client to indicate a game in your library has PlayStation controller support, so that means maybe we'll see some new notification on those games that do support it. And then updates to the client to make it more clear when a game requires use of a controller to play. Because there are some games out there that don't necessarily call out that you should be using a controller to play this, but it will definitely help to find out for sure what you need. I guess what they found, though, at least in these statistics here, at least as of recent, 27% of the controllers that are used on Steam right now for Steam games are Sony controllers, whether they're the DualShock 4 or the DualSense. So that's a pretty big number.
I guess it makes sense, though, simply because the battery is built into the controller. It makes sense for gamers to buy something that they can plug in right there and charge right there. And then when they're done charging it, they can unplug it from their computer that they're currently playing on and just keep going.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing for sure. I mean, don't argue with me, especially I won't argue with you on that one, because like my Series X controller, it's like the batteries go out. Obviously, I've either got to go fish for new batteries or I got to go find my USB Type-C cable to plug in, which I had been running on as of late. But yeah, having that built-in battery definitely makes things easier just to kind of keep things all neat and together and allow players to go. But
no, that's not to say, though, that there aren't other controllers that have built-in batteries or that come with battery packs. Like, I want to say most, if not all, the 8-bit do controllers come with built-in battery packs. Some of them have battery packs that you can swap for actual AA batteries if you so like that. But, I mean, I think it a big part of that has to be the fact that you're getting a comfortable controller that comes with a battery pack already.
Yeah, you're right. There are multiple controllers out there that don't or that already are built like that. But I think it's more of the feature set underneath that's in the DualSense and DualShock 4 controllers that gamers are looking for. Plus, for a lot of gamers, too, is that they jump between PC and console. And there are a lot of people out there that play exclusively PlayStation 5 and have a better feel and better use of something like the DualShock or DualSense versus a Xbox controller, which has been the de facto standard since really the Xbox 360 controller, if I'm not wrong, if I'm right here on this one. Needless to say, though, at least it's more support out there, more accessibility for people, and it just means that if you've got a controller you like and it ends up being a DualShock or DualSense and you've got a bunch of Steam games, maybe you'll find some that actually support the feature sets or even the controllers right out of the quote-unquote box.
That would be really cool. And I remember learning about the fact that they were adding the haptic feedback trigger support to, like, I want to say it was Metro Exodus was one of the first games that got it on Steam. But there's really nothing that tells you about it unless you go in and scroll through the patch notes. So it's kind of nice that, you know, they'll be adding that in for other games as well. It'll be interesting also to see what kind of games do support the haptic feedback triggers on the PlayStation 5 for the DualSense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It will be I'm almost wondering, I mean, obviously, of course, the DualSense stuff has to be built into the game to make use of those. Like, that's not just going to be something you're going to plug in your DualSense and now you're going to have the haptic feedback portions on the controllers. That has to be built in. But I'm sure that there are games that have worked on building it in that are not PlayStation titles that are now on PC. They just haven't been able to properly advertise it in a good fashion to say, yes, our game does support it, you know, like going through the store looking for a game that has it. Now, these tags and feature sets are going to be there to help show off what will support them. So good on them for opening that up and making that more clear to gamers out there, especially now that the percentage has increased greatly on who's using a Sony controller.
So yeah,
big stuff. But where we carry on to here is another bit of Steam news here in our last main story for the week. But it's an interesting bit of Steam news here. Apparently, Rockstar Games here, has reportedly sold games with DRM cracks on Steam. Now, this is a very interesting one, Kyle.
Interesting,
So, according to Bleeping Computer, apparently Rockstar Games used pirated software cracks to remove its DRM from some games they sell on Steam. So apparently a gamer was doing some reverse engineering on a couple games from Steam, and apparently, like, one game he looked at, Midnight Club 2 from Steam, there was an executable that went with the game called testapp.exe, and it apparently contained a Razer 1911 crack. So Razer 1911 is a known DRM crack, like cracking group, that will pull DRM from different software titles. And it looks like Rockstar either had copies of these that were already cracked and they published the wrong ones, or because of the age of some of the DRM on these things and the need to re-release them, they went ahead and just were like, well, this is one way to do it, but they didn't remove the fingerprints from those previous DRM cracks. So it's just interesting that they would have done this. But the problem is that they're not reaching out to indicate exactly why the games are up there like this, or like if they did this themselves and, you know, they're not sharing, or if they didn't realize it. You know, there's a lot of information we're not getting. But what do you think? Yeah, I mean, like, it's obviously not GTA. It's nothing like that. But it is obviously some popular Rockstar titles. Midnight Club, Manhunt. I think there was another one. Max Payne 2 is another one in the list here. Crazy, right?
Yeah, that it just seems bizarre and lazy. And that kind of makes me worry, because I have the Max Paynes on my Steam. And I kind of makes me wonder if maybe I have a cracked code or how that might affect me. But regardless, it's so silly that they were using cracked codes. Was someone just playing a prank at Rockstar, or, you know, did they really lose the original keys? I mean, it's just so weird that they couldn't have someone go, okay, well, we need a new key gen. Here's, you know, the original code, or, you know, here's what the original key code looked like. Someone should be able to have made a new key gen or something. It's just so weird that they would do it this way.
Or the other part too is that because these games are so old, depending on when they were released on Steam, it could be that they don't have access to the original DRM tools that they had to incorporate that DRM into these games originally. And so the only way to, you know, work on whatever they needed to, because, you know, some of these games do have like licensed music or licensed art in them, and that, and they have to clean things up. Of course, there was the infamous stuff with Alan Wake, for example. But not DRM necessarily, but all the licensed stuff. There very well could have been a licensing thing here that they had to go and take care of to re-release these titles. And when they did, they lost access to whatever that tooling was for the DRM and had to go this route. I mean, it's not a surprise to see it like it's a surprise to see like this. Don't get me wrong, but we also saw Bethesda and ID Studios, when Doom Eternal dropped, that they had another executable built in that allowed you to effectively bypass the built-in, I think it was, I can't remember, I think it was Denuvo DRM, but you could just go and find that executable and run that, and you had no problems whatsoever, and people were even showing that it was improving performance in that by using that other .exe file. Needless to say, though, I mean, that's probably more of a distribution mistake compared to this, which is just weird. Rockstar hasn't said anything yet, though. I don't know exactly why they would have gone this way or what, but hopefully they'll come out soon and say, oops, we made a mistake. We're gonna pull those and do whatever we need to. But, or yeah, we had to do this. We don't know yet, though.
Yeah, I don't even know what to make of this.
It is funny, though.
It is really funny, and it's funny that they got caught doing it too, especially with their own games. It's so silly, but I guess in a way, it's a Rockstar thing to do. You think about some of the trolley stuff that they've done in the past with some of their games. Like, it's kind of trolley for them to just go, oh, we lost the key or the key gen, or, you know, the thing to properly make it. Let's just steal someone else's crack.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Because apparently, like, I was reading about this here in the article here. It says Razer 1911... the actual cracking group that had made the one that is embedded into this apparently was founded in 1985 and then disbanded in 2012, mostly because of the change in the market to go from physical games to cloud distribution for games. So it was a little bit different when it came to like cracking titles. And of course we still had a whole other uprising of modders and DRM crackers and such who have now worked behind the scenes to bypass all that stuff for people who truly want around that stuff. So it doesn't mean that the work isn't happening. It's happening by different people. But the fact, though, that this group that hasn't existed for 11 years now, their stuff is still being used in some capacity here, or at least is somehow still made it to the wild. But needless to say, when we do hear information from Rockstar, we'll, of course, report on it in another episode of the News Roundup. In the meantime, though, that is it for the main stories for this week's News Roundup, and we move on to the quest markers with Kyle. Kyle, what do we have in the quest markers this week?
For our first quest marker this week, you miss the Xbox 360. I miss my Xbox 360.
Yes, I do.
Well, why not build one with Mega Bloks? So Mega Bloks is actually releasing a 1,400-piece set that will basically allow you to rebuild the original OG Xbox that came included with Halo 3. The neat little kit will be 3/4 scale and will actually include the original box that had the cover art with the Halo 3 on it next to the system. So the release date for the actual unit will be October 8th of this year. However, you might want to start digging in your pockets because it's going to be $150 for this 3/4 scale replica Xbox 360. But if you're a big fan, totally worth it. It looks legit. The box just is the coolest thing ever to go along with it. Definitely a neat little display piece. And in our second quest marker for this evening, Stray is getting an animated movie.
What?
So, of course, breakout game from Annapurna that you got to play as a cat in a robot world. Will actually be Annapurna's first foray into the, I guess, animated feature or movie length, I guess, featurette in a way. I'm trying to find the information I had on here. I lost it. Well, anyway, but Big takeaway is Stray will be getting a animated feature movie, and I don't know if they had a release date for it as of yet. Yeah, it doesn't look like any planned release date yet, just that it has been announced. So keep your ears to the ground on that one. And then in the last quest marker for this evening, were you hoping for an Assassin's Creed Black Flag remake? You might think again. After Assassin's Creed Black Flag was pulled from a Steam sale, everyone got excited because they thought that Ubisoft was going to make an announcement. But no, it appears that a recent patch just broke the game. And then the really and truly, all they did was pull the game temporarily in order to fix the code, unfortunately. So no Black Flag remake announcement as of yet, and we still will be waiting, of course, for Skull and Bones.
Of course we will. Thanks, Ubisoft. Don't break one thing, and of course, the Skull and Bones has been broken for years anyway, and people keep on leaving, so that game will probably never, ever come out.
Right? I think they just had a new person quit, and their position had to get filled again, and I believe they were an art director. So maybe eventually we'll see Skull and Bones, or, I don't know, maybe in 10 years when they decide that one of the best Assassin's Creeds is worth a remake, they'll remake it. But until then, there is no announcement of an Assassin's Creed remake. But that is it for the quest markers for this evening.
Wonderful. And with that being it for the quest markers, that is it for the weekly news roundup for the week of September 8th, 2023. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's news roundup. Of course, if you like what you're listening to, be sure to check us out on your favorite podcast platform of choice and subscribe there. So that way, anytime a new episode comes up, it will immediately download to your device of choice. You can go check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we are probably on it. If you're not sure if your podcast platform is supported, go check us out on our homepage at anchor.fm/the-NPCs-podcast, and you can find all the links to all the platforms we are supported on. With that, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you all in the next one.
Laters.